Your mother's dead. Before long, I'll be dead. And you. And your brother. And your sister. And all of her children. All of us dead. All of us rotting in the ground. It's the family name that lives on. It's all that lives on. Not your personal glory, not your honour, but family.
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Well, I feel like I've got a little bit of PG's voice here. Welcome to SpecficMedia.com's presentation of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast.
Episode 7. All right, we now have an intro.
You win or you die.
All right.
I was channeling James Durham this morning. Why not channel PG tonight?
Well, welcome, everybody. This is Chooch Schubert. I'm joined with part of our awesome panel. We have my lovely wife, Viv.
Hey, everybody.
Christiana Ellis.
Hello.
And Nuchus.
Hi.
And our fearless leader, PG, is off saving the world. We got to take turns, apparently.
It's his turn.
We're discussing episode 7, which some of us saw early.
Yeah.
And some of us saw very late because of Balticon.
Some of us saw last night.
Yes, we were all at Balticon, and we spent lots of time hanging out with each other and utterly failed to either play the Game of Thrones board game or watch episode 7 while we were there.
But we had a lot of fun, and we talked a lot about the show and the books. We actually had the game set up at one point, though.
Yeah, we had all the board in place, and we were just trying to actually read through the rules, and it all fell apart because it was 2 o'clock in the morning and there were drunk people.
I know. Those drunk people, I tell you. I don't know. What are we going to do about those drunk people?
And well, you know, it's a... Yes, indeed. Well, my experience with Balticon is that it's very difficult. You know, awesome things happen constantly, but it's very difficult to ever make any specific awesome thing happen.
That's true, especially if it's not on the schedule.
And even when you plan to do things, sometimes it's unavoidable to actually do them or get pulled away from them. For instance, I was in the Into the Blender recording, and I got pulled out for a meeting, and I never actually got to get back in there.
Well, luckily it was recorded, so.
Yes, that is the plus side to missing things at Balticon.
Yeah, most of it gets recorded.
So we have initial thoughts about this episode?
I thought it was awesome. I loved it.
I only got to watch it once, but I really enjoyed it. I missed Peter Dinklage. I missed Tyrion very much. But I did feel like it was the most divergent from the books. And I've come to an understanding in my own mind. If I wanted to read the books, I would read the books. And I do like reading the books, so I do. Mm-hmm. But that this is something very different. And I'm kind of enjoying the edited scenes because I feel like it's bonus content on a DVD.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it too. Is I like the extra scenes. Yeah. They add. So far, I've not felt like any of them are really in conflict with anything that I had previously thought, and they add additional contexts.
Yes. Chooch, Viv.
Well, I mean. I agree with what Christiana said on the first episode that she joined us on, which was that this is a TV show. It is going to be different. It's not going to be just like the books. It can't be. It's a different form of media and all that. But I did have a problem with one of the created scenes, and I don't know if we want to talk about that now, if we want to go through a general sort of timeline or butterfly chase through the episode. What do you want to do, Chooch?
I think we'll do a general timeline as long
as
we...
Okay, well then, there was one that I didn't appreciate as it was done, although I do understand that the story need to be told. But otherwise, I thought it was a wow episode, you know. I mean, I knew a lot of stuff that was going to happen, but it was just still done in a way that was like, holy cow. Okay. So, Chooch, what did you think about the episode overall?
Well, I was happy that we got to meet Papa Tywin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Drogo gets darn white loquacious.
Ooh, yep.
Yeah.
Love that.
Overall, I did like it. Mm-hmm. I believe overall we got some notes from PG, and I think he's the only one who really, really, really did not like it.
Yeah.
Well, we jump right in. The first scene was just Jaime talking to Tywin.
Mm-hmm. Jaime and Dad.
Yeah. My only problem with that is I understand the symbolism of Tywin gutting a stag, but I just didn't think that Tywin would actually dirty his hands.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
I kind of felt like that, too. I mean, it has kind of the character beat. It's like of, you know, Tywin gets stuff done. He's the sort of guy, you know, it's like, you know, if you want something done right, do it yourself. And I can kind of see that in his personality, but, you know, he's got better stuff to do. He's an important guy. He's not gutting stags.
Right. Not afraid to get his hands dirty.
Yeah. So I certainly had no problem with the idea that he would be willing to if he felt like it was a good use of his time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that second part that I found questionable. Yeah.
Well, and this was, as we discussed, there are many created scenes in the book, there's many created scenes in the show that are different, that weren't in the book. Mm-hmm. But I think this one was, I think it was a good one to set up who Tywin is and mm-hmm. how he feels about different aspects, including his sons, which was very revealing.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I don't think he would have dirtied his hands. I think that was to make a point to Jaime. And I also have to wonder if they're just trying to ensure that they have no vegetarian or vegan fans, because I'm neither. I am a meat eater, although I have some odd food. You know, I don't eat anything on the bone. Anything that I've seen the face of, that kind of thing. But I was not able to watch the scene. I had to ask, okay, is anything going on other than the gutting of the stag? Because I can't look at the screen without, you know, feeling the need to hurl. I don't think that was a wise choice, because there are a lot of vegans and vegetarians and there's been a lot of gore and a lot of stuff like that. But I think that was unnecessary, you know, it didn't need it to be taken to that end. A couple of shots would have done it. We didn't need to see the skin peeled off of it and all of that stuff, because I would peek at the screen and then horrifically look away again. But again, I'm a very visual person, and it was, I thought, really important that he voiced even the most unimportant of the Lannisters is still a Lannister when talking about getting Tyrion back. That's a loving father.
I don't know. I didn't have a problem with the stag, except just in the context of, I felt like, you know, Tywin has got better stuff to do. He has people for that. But other than that, I thought the conversation that happened in it was, I thought it was great, because, you know, so far all we've seen is Jaime be all smarmy and smug and arrogant and everything. And then here we show him that, like, his dad can just cut him down just with a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, it's like, at least your incompetence tempered your recklessness or something, saved you from your recklessness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't have Tywin's personality pegged too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
You mean, I guess, from
the book. Okay. I don't know that he, that I got very much of to really know of his character, his personality. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was interesting that, he'll get his hands dirty. He's getting the job done. Obviously, they had to have something for them to do while they do this exposition and have this conversation. It'd be really boring if they were just sitting down and talking. Well, they've already done that. But and I thought it was interesting. You know, Jaime says he doesn't care what anyone thinks of him. And of course, Tywin says that's what you want people to think of you. But it was very clear throughout the scene that he really cares what Tywin thinks of him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And is definitely not getting what he wants out of Papa.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great father-son dynamic. I like it because in the books, we never get a scene with Jaime and Tywin together.
Mm-hmm.
There's hints at it. There's little pieces, but you really get the whole, you know, I'm Jaime Lannister. I'm all awesome. I'm badass. I don't care that people look down on me for being the Kingslayer. Oh, but I really need my daddy's approval. And it's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. And you get the whole, like, Tywin's not doing this out of love for Tyrion. he's doing it because he's a Lannister, mm-hmm. and he can't let that position go anywhere. Whereas Jaime, when he attacked Ned, that was out of love for his brother, not right. you dared attack a Lannister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kudos.
And the next scene we have Ned and Cersei.
Yep. I can't remember for sure if this has been mentioned on the show already, but there's a Tumblr blog called Winter is Coming, Bitches.
No, I haven't seen it.
Lovely. It's got a lot of very silly stuff on it and a lot of memes. But one of the memes that they've started there that I've started seeing in other places is just dumb Ned Stark, essentially.
Oh, yes.
So it's basically, I mean, obviously, you know, when we're not joking about it, we understand that it's just, it's in his nature to feel like, you know, it's death before dishonor, right? And he
right.
takes that seriously. And it's a matter of, you know, he almost feels like if you're not going to be honorable, then what's the point?
Right.
And so that's where he's coming from. But boy, you know, it's again, I'm going back to the way I described it to a friend of mine, is that he is so honorable that even people who care about honor in the first place will watch him and just go, wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Really? You know, we don't have quite all of the context as the book provided. The book, of course, making it clear that it's Ned's got a thing about not wanting innocent kids to be killed. Mm. And so that's his primary focus there. I think if it was just Cersei, he wouldn't have necessarily felt the same way. But with the kids, because, you know, back when they took out the Targaryens, there were some kids that were killed and he felt that was horrible.
Right.
Yes.
And so, you know, we can definitely see where he's coming from and say, okay, well, this is his point of view. And yet at some point you really just, it's like, okay, he really is determined to choose death before dishonor.
Yeah. And it was a total act of kindness on his part in going to her, because he was sure, okay, you know, I know this, you got to go. I'm trying to think about you. I'm trying to think about the kids. You know, he's going to be pissed and he's going to come after you and he's going to try and take all of you out. And it was the sweetest thing, you know, and of course we can talk about what comes later, because it happened in the episode is...
Betrayal.
Yeah. You know, something that PG mentioned in a previous episode, and it didn't click with me at the time we were recording it, but it clicked with me. He asked me to do one last QA on it before we posted it. And he said something about, you know, with all the plotting and the scheming and plans laid for so long, and it really just, in the blink of an eye, everything switches. And everything that was laid into plan, one tiny event happens, it derails everything, and everything goes in a different direction. That really resonated with me. And it's another situation here where she had been plotting for all this time for X to happen, and now Ned has started plotting for Y to happen. And then Robert gets gutted by a boar, and boom,
yeah.
everything is yeah. just flipped upside down. And it's that's how it happens in the book frequently. And I mean, come on, let's be honest, that's how it happens in life.
Mm-hmm.
Which I
mm-hmm.
think just is, I think, a great thing that he's shown here.
I'm on that Winter is Coming, Bitches Tumblr right now. And as you were talking about this, I'm scrolling past a little drawing of a man, and it's filled almost to the top with gray, and it says honor. And then in blue, only goes up to the boots, and it says common sense.
Yeah.
That's Ned Stark.
That's Ned.
Because honestly, I understand he's doing the honorable thing and he doesn't want children to die, but he found all this out because he was investigating the death of John Arryn. He discovered this is the reason why John Arryn was killed. So let me go to the person that would have arranged or had done the actual killing of John Arryn and tell her, oh, by the way, you know that thing you killed John Arryn about? Yeah, I know that too. And then think, oh, she's just going to leave. She's going to leave and I can take care of things. It's like, come on, Ned.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh, he's honorable to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
This is true.
Mm.
And we have the flip side with Littlefinger talking with, giving some training to Roz and another unnamed Hua.
Yeah. Now, I really liked that scene.
Oh, me too.
First of all, I'll say it was sexy. Mm-hmm. I thought, also, if you're able to, you know, draw your attention away from the nudity for a moment, Littlefinger's monologue in that whole thing is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it was downright Shakespearean.
Yeah,
yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I just don't think he would be telling that to his horse.
Personal information that he would probably keep closer to the vest.
Yes, but I'm fine with it because we as the audience needed to know this.
And in the book, I mean, we got all of this, you know, in different ways. And here he's able to kind of put it all out there in one scene. Mm-hmm. This again was a created scene. It wasn't in the book. And this is probably the only created scene that I was kind of like, okay, I understand. I get it. Sex sells. And that was a very sexy scene. Mm-hmm. But I think that it was done like that to, of course, give them something to do while he's giving this little, you know, speech. And I just had a problem with it because it really made me think about that one question that we had from someone asking, you know, do you think that they've added more sex just to add more viewers? Because people are going to be talking about that scene. They're going to be talking about it. People are going to be going, ooh, I got to check this out. This sounds, you know, really cool. And ooh, what are they talking about? Or, oh, I'm so shocked. How dare they show that? I have to look at it to make sure before I start a campaign against it. And so I'd say in that aspect, it's very successful because it's a very sexy yet probably controversial for some people because of what exactly is done in the scene. But I don't think that it would have to be done to the extent that it went to. And I think that it definitely at this point, they have definitely added more sex than was in the books than was necessary to portray what he was saying. Again, that said, it was a very sexy scene, and it was not, I mean, it was all consensual as, you know, it ever is when you're talking about paying for sex. And I felt like it crossed a line with me, but a line that is easily understood as far as the business aspect.
Well, I think this just proves a point that Littlefinger agrees with us that Roz is not as perfect as everyone seems to think she is.
Yeah.
You know, she's a big fish in a small pond up at Winterfell where there's not a lot of whores, but down in King's Landing, you got to work your way up. No. Yeah. You're not nearly convincing enough. And those breasts, they are not perfect.
Yeah.
although I say that purely in jest because she is quite beautiful, as are all of the naked people, I'm noticing.
Yeah.
I think they planned it that way.
It's a good plan. It's a good plan.
You mean, what do you mean they planned what that way?
That the naked people would be attractive.
They picked beautiful people to be naked.
You know what else?
That's crazy, Doc.
It seems like they picked.
Of course, we got the wine cellar naked later, so.
Yeah. I think that they also did a good job as far as getting realistic naked people instead of the girl with the girls with the triple D silicone implants. You know what I mean? They look like real people.
I agree with you on that. I've yet to notice anyone that I'm sitting there going, really? They had breast implants in Westeros?
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing that. So you know what? I'm 100% in agreement with you. And even last episode, when we got to see Roz's other bits, they were not the way that...
that wasn't natural for that. What I would expect that time frame to be.
Did you guys freeze frame it or something? I mean, there. Yeah.
Well, I thought I
felt like we didn't really see very much.
I didn't think we saw very much, but I didn't think that there was much... shrubbery as much as I would expect.
Okay.
I'll have to go back.
Now you have an excuse to go back.
In my head, there's 70s jungle bush going on.
Well,
so.
maybe I wasn't.
That's kind of what I remember too, is that we saw basically some hair and not really anything else. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't like see any like specific defined things, but I guess I don't know.
Well, one thing I thought in this scene is it kind of goes to, you know, he sees all women as objects except for one.
Yeah.
And that he is, you know, he has no morals. He's, you know, he's running his whorehouse. And then that's going to come through later in the episode of, you know, just how opposite he is of Ned.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Well, he has no morals except for those that surround her.
Well, see, I'm not convinced that he actually really still loves Catelyn in the way that we normally would describe people in love with
I think it's an obsession.
I agree with Christiana. I think it's turned into something really different.
He's almost more interested in screwing over Ned than he is in really being with Catelyn, I think.
Well, Roz even says that she must be very beautiful, and he's like, meh.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. We move on to Osha, Theon, and Pycelle trying to remember what they were talking about.
Well it's
first, it's Theon.
Theon and right, Osha right, right, first, just, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought that, first of all, you know, it was fun just seeing her, you know, he's all trying to come in like, you know, I'm high and mighty, you're just an ignorant savage, and he's a little dismayed to discover that somehow she is turning being an ignorant savage against him.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And so it's kind of just like, you know, where are you from? It's like, you know, well, I've never heard of it. You never heard of the Iron Islands? He's trying to like, you know, diss her, and she's kind of like, you've never heard of where I'm from either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she calls him a southerner, and he gets all uppity about it. And then she's also just pointing out, it's kind of like, why do I call you Lord if it's your father that's the Lord? You're not Lord yet.
Exactly. I thought that was beautifully executed. It was just lovely to watch because you're right. He came in there with something to prove, like, oh, here's someone I'm better than. And I get to mess with them the way everybody messes with me. And she just like flips it right in his face.
She really does.
Yeah,
and she kind of throws it. Go ahead.
Sorry, I think that the oh snap of the scene though has to go to Pycelle when he comes in and says, "You know, this is how you treat our guest." And he's like, "I thought she was our prisoner." And he says, "Are the two so different in your experience?"
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Oh snap.
Yeah. And we also get our first real significant mention of what we saw in the very first episode with the White Walkers, someone that's been north of the Wall and can speak on it, and that I thought it was very chilling. They didn't leave. They've been sleeping, or was it that which, or they've been frozen. Yeah. They've been sleeping.
They've been sleeping.
Which I was like, ooh.
Cthulhu.
One thing.
Go ahead, Chooch.
One thing I was wondering is, have they really mentioned any significance about the Meister's chains?
They mentioned it in one episode, but they didn't go into detail about the chain, each link being representing something different, and why there are different colors and why there are jewels on some.
Yeah, I just like that they got the details right on that, even if they're not actually, you know, talking about that. You know, I think details and stuff like that, I don't know if it's a good use of the show's time to do it in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that they you know, the costume designers took the time to get it right.
Absolutely.
I pictured the links being a little bit smaller, but when I saw them on screen, it made more sense for them to be bigger because they're often talking about different maesters pulling at the links around their neck because they're a little tight, whereas on screen, like, that's just, in reality, that just doesn't work, you know? And so I really like how the Maester's chains were done.
Right. Well, plus I can imagine that it's kind of a status thing for the Maesters.
Yes,
absolutely.
You know, you want people to be able to see which ones you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Flana,
especially
got
that Valyrian steel one. I really liked Osha in this scene, and I think that it really gave us an idea of her character that we don't really get to see until much later. Mm-hmm. And I just love the woman playing her. I love everything, her little looks, her winks, everything. I'm totally squeeing and going to fangirl over Osha now. So that's all. I meant from now on, not like right now.
Oh, okay. We were waiting. We were giving a pause for you. Go ahead. Squee, fangirl, we're waiting.
No. Just every time I watch the shows, when she comes on screen, I'll be like, you know, kind of like I do with Tyrion.
So next up, we finally revisit the Wall and see Jon and Samwell.
And again, more obsessed with girls than what we saw in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, considering his age, it totally makes sense.
But yeah. Did you notice that he looked over the edge of the wall?
Yeah, that was kind of,
I'm noticing growth here.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Well, and he's proactive about doing the right thing. He's paying attention. You know, it's like, they see a rider. So wait, okay, we need to blow the horn. Let's do it. Let's do what we're
one
supposed
for rangers,
to do.
2 for wildings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, just briefly, how ominous it is. Obviously, that I don't know. It sort of had more of an impact in the show to me than that scene in the book, of just the idea that Uncle Benjen's horse has come back without him.
Yeah,
it's a really bad sign, and you can see it in sort of the exchange of looks between John and Mormont.
Right.
Yes, I agree.
Especially the condition of the horse. It was frothing and it was wild. It was freaked out.
Yep.
You know, something scared the living shit out of it. And it was, you know, I was wondering if they were going to put it down in front of us because it was so gone.
Yeah.
Sad horsey.
It made me wonder about a lot of things also. But, you know, there's some theories out there about what might have happened to Benjen, why he's not returned. And seeing the horse, it just, like on screen, it makes me go, I wonder. So I'm not quite sure what has happened to Benjen as I was.
And then we come to Robert and Ned. And I love Cersei's face seeing Ned like, oh, fuck. He's going to tell him.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about Joffrey, though? The exchange between him and Joffrey.
I thought it was, given how much of a little shit Joffrey is generally.
Yeah.
I like it when we get these little moments of him not being just a total waste of human being. You know what I mean? It's like this, you know, he's genuinely, sincerely upset about his dad.
That's the first time you see anything like that from him, I think.
Yeah. And so, again, you know, not a likable character, but I like it when there's a little bit more complexity there.
Right.
And he's not just, you know, total douche all the time.
Right. Because regardless of the fact that his dad is a drunkard, it's his dad, you know, to his mind.
Yeah.
I also thought it was nice to see some care and concern from Robert for his son.
Yeah.
Because he really doesn't show that.
And
he just ignores them.
Yeah, even more than what he says to Joffrey, I liked what he said to Ned, which was, help him. It's like there's this, it's like, you and I know what Joffrey is.
Yeah.
Try to do something. Better. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was just an interesting scene, first of all. Just brief note of the whole bit about, you know, the king's own words, but, you know, Ned's writing them down and just the signature and everything. I'm just thinking, I can't help but think that identity theft would be, and forgery would be.
Yeah. And,
but it had his seal.
And what you're referencing is that Robert instructs him to write down that Ned is to rule as regent until Joffrey comes of age. And instead of writing Joffrey, Ned writes rightful heir instead.
Well, but I was also just thinking about, like, you know, oh, look, the seal. Like, nobody could ever look at a seal and then carve up something that looks like it.
Right.
That's
true.
But anyway, that's really sort of beside the point. But
something we take for granted in all medieval tales.
But it has the seal.
Or fantasy.
But I thought it was interesting because, you know, obviously Robert is, you know, not happy about what's going on, but he's kind of at peace with it at this point.
Right.
He's just, he's a warrior and, you know, as far as he's concerned, this isn't how he would have chosen, but at least he got the pig. You know, he's sort of just like when we saw when he was, you know, almost went out to the tournament without his shirt on. it's that whole thing of like, we want to have a feast and I want everyone to taste the pig that got me.
Yeah.
that sort of perverse sense of humor, even to the end.
Yeah.
Whereas here, Ned is thinking, oh crap, this is like worst case scenario.
Yeah.
I don't know what a thermonuclear bomb is, but if I did, this would be.
Exactly.
Well, but then again, we get Ned's damn honor. In the sense of, you know, he cares so much about his friend, that's good, that he doesn't tell him what he knows.
Yeah.
Which is bad.
Which is bad. Mm-hmm. Certainly turns out bad anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, Ned, even though he's doing what he thinks is a deceitful thing, you know, he didn't write it down exactly as Robert said, and he just looks so guilty and torn, like, I can't believe I've done it. But that is literally the worst thing he can bring himself to do.
Yeah.
Which you got to admire, but you also got to, like, kick him in the nuts for. It's like, come on, dude, ball up, you know? Save your realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of people, especially Renly later, are kind of bring up the whole point that it's kind of like, why are you so obsessed with the rightful, you know, order of, you know, succession?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't so concerned with it with the Mad King, were you?
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, obviously you are willing to break that when you feel it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So don't you think this would qualify?
Yep. Yes. Yes.
But apparently not. So...
Oh, Ned.
It seems like it's he wants the honor to happen, and he's willing to make it happen. You know, he's willing to wield the sword to dispense the king's justice, but he's not willing to really strike out and force a revolution or force these things unless he has no other alternative. It's honorable, but it's also, I think, kind of weak the way he's actually letting these things happen.
It's this weird sense that somehow, like, a big war that kills thousands and thousands of people is better than one assassination at night.
Exactly.
And
the needs of the many should outweigh the needs of the few.
It's like when he was arguing against killing Daenerys. It's the same thing. It's like they're saying, we're trying to prevent a war that could kill thousands of people and destroy the kingdom, but you don't want to kill one girl.
Mm. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's Ned's thing would probably just be to say, you know, yes, we killed the Mad King because he was mad and crazy and killed people for no good reason. If we just start doing the same thing just to keep the crown, then we're really not any better.
Right.
And, you know, we could argue that there are degrees of better.
Yeah.
But
and then you'd have to fight a rebellion like every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have to say Ned was right about not wanting to assassinate Daenerys, because I've always felt that had that not happened, she would have stayed in Vaes Dothrak.
Yep.
You know, nothing would have happened. It's the assassination attempt that really brings all that to a head. And, you know, so there's that.
And what did you think of Varys planting the idea, that little spider kind of tugging on his spider webs and planting the idea that Robert Squire made sure that Robert was drunk while he was hunting?
Another
Lannister.
Christiane and I keep saying the same thing and having the same thoughts.
I just hope the poor lad isn't blaming himself.
That he just plays every card so well.
I wonder, Sir Barristan, who gave the king this wine?
His squire, from the king's own skin.
His squire, the Lannister boy.
Such a dutiful boy to make sure his grace did not lack refreshment. I do hope the poor lad does not blame himself.
Yeah. Oh, just to go back to that last scene just for a moment, when we were saying, you know, Ned was right to not try to assassinate Daenerys, he is also, in hindsight, right about Jorah being a traitor.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Yep.
I condemned that bastard as a traitor, and I was right about it.
Yes.
And he's been proven right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then we see the scene with Daenerys and Ser Jorah, where Jorah has received a pardon from a very knowledgeable little 8-year-old boy, it seems like. And the pardon was for basically delivering Daenerys for assassination, and that he'll be welcomed back to the Seven Kingdoms. But, you know, he didn't really follow through with that. You know,
well, just before that, we had Drogo and Dany talking a little bit. And basically, we're getting that, him reiterating, we don't cross the ocean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And her frustration and like, how am I going to make this happen?
Yeah. And his thought is, a king rides a horse. He doesn't sit in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I like the interaction between Dany and Droger there, because we do feel that they love each other and that there's mutual respect here. And we've come a long way in 7 episodes from what looked like rape to an actual loving couple.
Oh, that didn't look like rape. That was rape. But you know, please continue.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
But
I do.
It's come quite a far distance. And, you know, my moon and my stars and all of that, it's true. And we see it. And that just makes me very, very happy.
What I was going to say is kind of along those same lines, but I liked the little details of showing that, you know, she's still learning the language. Like, mm-hmm. she's getting pretty good, but occasionally he has to correct her a little bit. And then, like, she doesn't have a word for throne, so she just has to use the, Westeros road or word, not road. Anyway. But I agree. I like the interaction between them. And, you know, after being so taciturn and stoic through most of the early episodes, we're finally giving Drogo some stuff to do.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. I want to jump back real fast with Robert and Ned, that it was the first time, I think, that anybody had said Milk of the Poppy, which I was kind of cheering because it's like they said it every other fucking word in the book and it drove me crazy. You can use a different term. It doesn't have to be that.
Yeah.
I when reading the books, I kind of think, I'm like, why don't we ever hear about the attics of the Milk of the Poppy? Like, where's the Milk of the Poppy house where people just lay there and drink and because basically it's heroin.
Well, you know, it's interesting though because obviously, you know, heroin comes from poppies, you know, all the opiates. But I don't know, in the context of the books specifically, I never got the impression that Milk of the Poppy was actually especially fun to take. You know what I mean? Mm. It's not, it's like stronger than that. You know what I mean?
It's the end of the road. Yeah.
Yeah. It basically, it's not something you would take and have like a good time on. It's something you would take and like go to sleep and there's no real like recreational benefit because it kind of, you know, you get sick if you take too much and all it does when you take it is make you sleep.
That's
the impression I had, but you know, you never know. We might find out at some point that there are people who find a way
deluded or something.
I'm just glad on the show we don't have to hear about it all the time. So back to when you say Danny and Jorah are talking, and when Jorah is saying, you know, I've got to run this errand, and she said, oh, I'll come with you. No, it's okay. No, really. No. And, you know, it's pretty clear on her face. She starts suspecting something's up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Smart cookie.
Which brings them to the wine cellar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy that sells wine, not a basement in your house.
I will lure her to my wine cellar.
Right.
Interesting. Which I found it interesting. It probably means absolutely nothing. It's probably just a typo, but she addressed the wine cellar as Sir.
S-E-R.
And on the closed captions, it said S-E-R, which could just be a typo, could be nothing. That's just, you know, being polite. But in the book, I don't know that anybody uses that as just a polite term. It's always an honorific.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, but I thought that was a good scene. The guy seemed, you know, like if we didn't know better, he seemed pretty, you know, straight up, you know, and he was offering her wine, you know, he's saying, oh, you're from Westeros. Oh, this is great. I've got good stuff for you. But, you know, it's basically Jorah having additional context and also just being a little more savvy to begin with of saying, you know what? I'm going to just check this out. And if this guy's legit, it's no problem. You know, if it's just a matter of like, hey, this is just actual wine and this is just a normal guy, drink it. And he goes, okay, takes a sip. All right, done.
But if he's getting a pardon for setting her up, then why does he step in and save her?
Because he's already changed his mind that he cares for her. He doesn't want to see her dead.
He sees the power of everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. He's fallen in love with her. Mm-hmm. I mean, Viserys alluded to that. I know what you want my sister for, or what you want to do to my sister. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty clear that he's captivated by her.
how I'm captivated by her, you know? I'd follow the Khaleesi.
I mean, is he just trying to have his cake and eat it too?
Well, I think that that was a turning point for him. At least, you know, it was in the books. It was like, yes, he's working so hard to get back to Westeros, and he just wants to get back to the Seven Kingdoms and be accepted and be a lord again and blah, 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 blah. And then along comes the girl that can make it happen by her death, mm-hmm. and he can't bring himself to do it because of he's fallen in love with her or whatever, you know, he sees greater power with them. I'm not sure what exactly it is. I think it's a little both.
Right.
Being her right-hand man will make him more powerful than he would be if he returned to Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, what does he have to return to Westeros?
Yeah.
A wife who's already left him for another man? He may be pardoned, but nobody will respect him.
No, he'd still be a laughingstock.
He's respected. He saves the life of the Khaleesi. And like you said, he's enamored by Daenerys. And who wouldn't be? And I think it's really interesting that we actually got to see Jorah's perspective here, because in the books, we don't see it. So we don't really know that he's changed his mind in this scene, mm-hmm. that this is the big turning point for him. We don't know that. And in the series, I kind of enjoy seeing that.
Yeah.
I was like cheering. I was like, yay, he's the Jorah that I love.
Well, and again, it was none of the chapters were from his POV. So we only exactly. see the scenes happen with him from Daenerys' point of view,
mm-hmm.
which at this point, she doesn't suspect him of anything. So,
well, and just to be a little bit more cynical, too, technically, you know, as long as it doesn't get back to anyone that he thwarted the mm-hmm. attempt,
yeah.
he can continue to play both sides.
That's true.
That's true.
Although I definitely think his personal feelings for Daenerys were more of an influence there. Mm-hmm. However, I don't know that that would necessarily mean he's going to completely stop, you know, informing on her.
Oh, yeah. Right. Because then they'll send somebody after him and he won't mm-hmm. get any more money.
Yeah. If nothing else, he's going to feel like, oh, well, if I stop, then they'll know something's up.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he can tell himself that to justify why he continues to do it.
The next four scenes, I didn't really have any notes for. I don't know if mm-hmm. we've got the courtyard of the wall when they're doing the speech about.
Oh, what and they're embarking John on. Gets assigned to be a steward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty important.
Yeah, he had had his heart set on being a ranger like Uncle Benjen, and mm-hmm. instead he becomes a steward and is pissed about it.
Oh, well, yeah.
Where Sam immediately sees the value.
And you really see Sam's quick mind, because he immediately mm-hmm. sees the potential there. You don't get it. You're not just cooking and serving. They're grooming you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think one of the things that's great about Martin's writing just generally is that, you know, just like he gives the you know, the despicable characters some of their own charm and good points, he also occasionally makes the more likable characters a bit of hypocrite or, mm-hmm. You know, a little childish.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
he's just finished telling Sam there's honor in being a steward.
Right.
And then he's about to leave because he doesn't get to be a ranger.
Unless it's me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, he even says it always wanted to be a ranger. And Sam said, I always wanted to be a wizard, you know, which I thought was.
I love that.
That was pretty badass.
And in the books. In the book, John actually goes to Mormont and Maester Aemon mm-hmm. and asks for Sam to be put as a steward for Maester Aemon
mm-hmm.
because he's clever, because he reads, because he's so intelligent and he has all of these skills
yeah.
and it would be a good spot for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the books, you see that he really does value the steward
yeah.
position and he thinks that Sam will do very well there. And in the books, the same thing happens where he's like, are you kidding me? I'm going to wash up after someone. This is ridiculous. You know, I'm better than that. And Sam tells him, when I was young, my father would take me to council meetings. He'd have me watch everything until his younger brother was old enough. And his father had decided, yeah, you're not going to be the Lord. He is.
Right.
And I think his younger brother's name is Dickon or something. Anyway, that's not important. And it is Sam that says, you know, you're an idiot. Look at this. You're going to be with Sir Jorah. You're going to be with Lord Mormont the entire time, the Lord Commander. This is important. And it so is. And I like, again, like you said, that there's flaws in our heroes. I like that John had his little, you know, temper tantrum.
His tizzy fit.
Yes, yes. Because it shows that being on the wall, he always envisioned himself as being on the wall. And this is the start where he starts to wonder, am I really where I should be? And we're going to see some conflict with John being at the wall. And this is the start of it.
Well, I mean, he already had that when they were headed to the wall and he saw that it was rapists and thieves and that sort of thing. He was doubting it. Mm-hmm. And you see that once he gets there and he gets the camaraderie with the other newbies, and here's another slap in the face where he's doubting it again.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, realizing he really has no other choice unless he wants to go off and, you know, try and find somebody to marry him or fire off a bunch of bastards of his own.
Now, I wonder, if he married somebody, they'd still be bastards, right? Because he doesn't actually have a name.
Yeah, I guess they...
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
What were you going to say, Christian?
Maybe if he could convince someone with their own house name to marry him, which would be a trick. But if they could, then potentially the children might be able to carry on that name.
Right.
What I was also just going to say is I also liked just the moment with Pip and, just kind of, you know, him telling sort of the, you know, you want to talk about fair and telling
loved
the whole real
that.
Story of him. And then I loved so much just Sam saying, would you sing a song for
I'd
me?
Love to hear a song right now.
Yeah. And it was just like totally sincere and still Pip is just like.
Could you sing me a song, Pip? I'd like to hear a song.
I really like that too, Christiana, and I love the whole, wait, but I thought you stole bread for your starving sister. Yeah, like I'm going to tell somebody that a lord was trying to reach for my cock.
Yeah, a bunch of strangers. Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I love the wall. I love the boys up at the wall.
We have Ned and Renly's talk when, as you were saying before, talks about why do you care about the line of succession?
Yeah, and makes some really good points about, you know, we know what Stannis is. He's a good soldier. Are you really still so convinced that good soldiers make good kings?
Brilliant point.
That was a great line.
And I think what sank Renly's argument, though, in Ned's eyes is just that he couldn't see past there's the self-interest involved. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like if Renly was coming to suggest someone else, even though there's not really anyone else who would be better, you know, it's just like he can't see past that. It's like as soon as it's about him becoming king, it's like it discredits all of his arguments
right.
in Ned's eyes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and again, I think we also have Ned's honor coming into play here, because I think another thing that makes him change his mind is when Renly says that they need to seize Cersei and the children, get the children from their beds, and Ned's like, wait, what? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. We're going to grab children from their beds and lock them up? Like, are you insane? This is not the kind of men that we are. So
it's like, no, you're the kind of man who's going to get lots and lots more people killed.
Yes.
Countless, countless numbers of people killed.
You know what a hero is? A hero is somebody who gets other people dead.
Yeah.
I'm hitting all the sci-fi genres tonight.
There you go.
Again, you know, we're not necessarily convinced ourselves that Renly is the best person to be king per se, but we're pretty sure he's going to be better than Joffrey.
Right.
Yeah.
So. And there's talk about how awful Stannis is. And
We still haven't even seen him in the show yet.
No. Yeah. But I think the people would hate him.
Well, to be honest, not that he'd be worse than Joffrey, or that he'd be worse than Cersei, since Joffrey's just a puppet.
Yeah.
Well, that's
he
true.
He wouldn't be worse than Joffrey, though.
But so, and then, of course, we have Littlefinger coming in to say, yes, Joffrey will be a puppet. How about we have him be our puppet?
Yes, Ned makes a deal with the devil.
Oh, Lord Baelish. He is smart.
Oh, yeah.
Again. Yeah. Ned's too honorable.
Yeah, and well, and that's the thing too, is that, you know, obviously what Ned, you know, he sort of makes this half-assed backwards deal. It's his whole honor. It's just like Littlefinger says, and it's like, you know what needs to be done, and yet the words stick in your mouth. And so, but you know, it's like, as far as Littlefinger's concerned, it's like, listen, I told you what I think we should do. You don't want to do that. So at this point, I'm going to tell you what you want to hear.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Because clearly you have just decided that you do not share my interests.
Yes. And it's almost like Ned made up Peter's mind right then and there on how mm-hmm. to proceed.
It's the if you're not with me, you're against me thing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he would have let it be the sole deciding factor, but I think Littlefinger is more than a little pleased to be able to screw over Ned.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
We head out to the Godswood when John and Sam say their words. And this weird word had a face.
Yeah.
I like the faces. I thought, I imagined in the books that they would be a little bit more abstract, like a little harder to actually see as a face, as opposed to being so, you know, clearly face-like. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Because in the books, the faces were carved into the trees by the first men, and the red that comes down is the sap. So I just pictured this abstract, overgrown scar into the tree, not an actual mouth that looks like a mouth and, you know, everything like that. But I think it worked. I think it worked very well.
So was the Weirwood in Winterfell supposed to have a face?
Yes. We just didn't see it.
We rewound it.
We backed that up several times and we were unable. We saw something that looked like a knot that we thought, well, maybe that's it. But it wasn't anything.
I thought I remembered seeing it, but maybe I'm mistaken.
The tree in the opening scene, in the title sequence, it has something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's like claymation kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we tried really hard because one of you mentioned seeing it, and we're like, oh, gosh, we missed it. We got to go back and look and see it. And we couldn't find it.
No.
I think it was the title.
Okay. Maybe, yeah, that's what we finally came to was it must have been the title sequence because we don't see no face.
And I don't know if it really matters, but I remember from the books that they made a really big deal about this Godswood and how it's ancient and all the stuff. And it really didn't seem that special in the show other than, you know, anything beyond the wall is special just because it's a dangerous place. But they didn't really make too much of a stink about it.
But we got to see Ghost again.
Yeah.
He did. He looked small.
Yeah.
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 Well, and you know, are they full size yet?
Yeah, they're dire wolves, not regular wolves. We don't even know how fast they grow.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Though from itty bitty pups, they seem to have grown pretty darn fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he does. Ghost still seems small.
He actually looked smaller to me in this episode than other episodes, but I think that it might be because of the larger landscape shots we were seeing.
Just the context.
We were seeing a more close up. The other thing is I found out that the scene with the close up of Ghost when he's threatening the other, I forget the guy's name, when he was threatening the guy, they woke him up in his sleep. The eyes were digitally done to make them red, and that there was digital enhancement on that. So again, that might just be we're seeing an unenhanced shot and so forth. What'd you guys think of the hand?
That was a creepy little mofo hand.
Didn't look decayed much, did it?
Mm-mm. No.
No, it looked, you know, pretty cold and preserved.
Yeah.
Fresh from the butcher.
Yeah. Did we talk about the scene? I guess it was at the end of the scene with Renly and Ned and Baelish about him sending the letter to Stannis, or does that come later?
Well, he was in the process of writing that letter when Baelish came to see him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so he was sending it off, and so Baelish was kind of like, you're really determined to do this. And that's when Ned's sending it out.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Give this to Lord Stannis, not his guardsmen, not his wife, Stannis himself.
Especially not his wife.
Especially not the wife.
You can't trust spouses in Westeros. Saying. It's not a spoiler. We've all learned you can't trust spouses.
Yeah. Even when they actually love you, they do dumb things like capturing the son of your enemy and
exactly
taking him off to her crazy sister.
Oops. Sorry, hon.
Or we could flip it too. We could say when your husband tromps around the kingdom following the exact footsteps of his predecessor which got him killed,
right,
and then warns your sworn enemy, warns her so that she has plenty of time to turn it all around on him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Stupid. You just can't trust anybody.
No, you can't. Peter was right. You can't trust anyone.
We've already talked a bit about the scene with the wine cellar.
Well, are you talking about initially or when we come back to him where he is captive and Danny goes in there?
Yeah, so the whole scene where Drogo comes in takes just a hint of a moment to look at the wine cellar, and we're all set up assuming that like his priority is going to be to beat the crap out of this guy or torture him or something. Mm-hmm. But no, only just barely a glance, and then his first concern is it making sure she's okay.
Yes, mm-hmm.
and then stomach.
Launches the whole. Oh. Oh my god!
I'm getting goosebumps again. That was I think that was the most powerful scene that we've seen yet in the series, mm-hmm. because you're absolutely right. He barely takes one look at him, and she looked as shocked as she looked as shocked as we all felt mm-hmm. that he runs to her. Are you okay?
Yeah.
And then he just. Good Lord, he unleashed it.
Is it just me or was that scene really sexy?
I'm
not going to talk to you out of this morning. What the fuck, young boy? My petite for George to some of my son, don't rock.
The power.
This is why you're the man of my dreams.
I was ready to take up a sword and, you know, head off.
I just pretended I didn't hear the line about we will rape their women.
I just decided to gloss. I decided, I'm going to remove that from, you know, delete.
Are want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that, but I mean, that's more to his passion about the whole thing. And that's just what they do. Mm-hmm. You take over a city, you steal their shit, you rape their women. Yeah.
They're Vikings.
Like, I didn't mean me personally.
Right.
I will have my men rape their women.
The royal eye.
there is quite a bit of raping in the books, by the way.
There is.
Those who haven't read. But I don't think, Khal Drogo never actually partakes in any of the raping.
Except the men, for Danny at the beginning. But
well, yes, except for her. But his men do all the raping. Mm-hmm. And, for him, it's no. He's got his moon.
His queen.
Moon of his life, yes. Mm-hmm. I love their nicknames.
Those are the best. Those are the best.
My sun and my stars, the moon of my life. They're just, mm-hmm. they're very sweet. And they express exactly how they feel about each other.
Yeah.
I think in hindsight, as much as we were joking about, how many times does he speak mm-hmm. in this episode? And he grunted, yay, a sound. I think that really lent itself to performance that we saw, the contrast of how stoic mm-hmm. and how he doesn't need to say anything. He can mm-hmm. grunt and point, and the equivalent of 20, of his soldiers here would be two, would go running over and do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And the power and everything, because you knew he needed to do that to rally his people who do not want to go onto the horses that ride on the sea and cross the ocean to take over this quote land that they don't even know really exists. It's not holy. None of their holy lands are there. None of their, any of the things that they honor and revere are there. But, it was like he was so impassioned. And as the call, he knew he had to really dig deep. And he did it for Danny as total retribution for them daring to try to kill his wife and child. It was freaking amazing.
It was. And so basically what we're saying here is that he's Silent Bob.
There's a million fine-looking women in the world, dude, but they don't all bring you lasagna at work. Most of them just cheat on you.
He doesn't speak, and when he does,
it's epic.
It's utterly profound.
Yeah.
How about you, Chooch?
Exact, that's right on.
Minus the sexy part, or
no, that was sexy.
All right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Beefcake.
I love you, Chooch.
Beefcake.
Which brings us to Ned coming before the new King Joffrey.
Yeah.
Kneel before Zod.
Oh. She got one more in.
Mm. I did. But he's asking Ned to kneel,
Yeah, yeah. So he gets his reassurance from the head of the city watch, and then
mm-hmm. and Littlefinger. He got the reassurance from Varys, from Littlefinger, and the captain of the city watch.
And then Bazinga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bazinga.
Yeah. I like to imagine that Varys felt bad about what was going to happen to Ned, but it was just kind of like, I tried to warn him, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I don't want to be on his side when that all goes down.
Right.
And I'm not quite sure Varys can feel guilt.
Yeah, I don't know that we, especially,
not
I mean.
Not guilt so much as regret.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, honey.
There goes one of my pawn pieces. My chess pieces out of the game.
Dad was so easy to manipulate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You knew how he was going to react at every turn.
After all the setup and little hints that I did, it's all just wasted.
Yeah. Yeah. And Baelish had warned him too. Or, mm-hmm. Yeah, Peter Baelish, Littlefinger. Yeah. Sorry. Littlefinger had warned him too. And he says it at the end. I warned you, you know, I told you not to trust me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to say, when I was reading this part of the book, and this isn't a spoiler because they jump the point of views a lot. And sometimes it's a little while in between hearing from somebody. So after this scene, we don't really hear from Ned for a while. And when I originally read the book, I read it instead of Baelish puts the dagger under his chin, mm-hmm. for some reason my head said like through his chin.
Right. Yeah. Mm.
I thought he
I've
killed
heard that from a lot of
I
readers.
Thought he did.
I thought he killed Ned, and then chapter, there's nothing from Ned, and then you got all the other stuff that goes on, and I'm thinking, wow, they just don't even know Ned's dead.
Yeah.
And then boom, there he is. I'm like, oh.
I know. That's the exact same way it was when I read it the first time.
Flip. Oh, okay. Just under the chin.
I did the same thing. That's exactly how I read it the first time, which of course, unless I'm mistaken, we're going to have to chop this for the spoiler episode because as we left the episode, it was just the knife under his chin.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm. But yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how I read it. How about you guys? I'm just curious.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
I didn't read it that way, but I've heard that from a lot of people, because a lot of people who have read the books are like, oh my gosh, did Ned just die? And so that's pretty common of a thought. I didn't have that thought in particular.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. I mean, I guess I can understand how that could happen, but I didn't have that problem. I was, you know, shocked just by, you know, the turn of events, but I, you know, I didn't. Well, see, because, you know, well, never mind. I was going to say something else, but it was spoilery, so never mind.
Well, this whole part's spoilery, so I'm going to have to kind of put it in the spoiler episode.
Well, I can see maybe if I can edit around it to where I just say, I thought he stabbed him in the chin and not just held it under. Well, I said we're not going to hear from him for a while, so people might assume he is dead, too.
Yeah, I think there may be viewers that look at that and think that.
Honestly, we've got three episodes left. I think we're going to see Ned, and I don't think
true.
This is a spoiler.
I think it's
true. Yeah, I don't think anything we said so far is really spoiler.
They probably will compress it.
Yeah.
I was just going to say we did get a nice moment of Barristan's disillusionment in the sense of, you know, he verifies that, yes, those are the king's words, and then mm-hmm. Cersei just tears it up.
Yeah.
And
you
can see how horrified he is.
Poor Barristan.
We have a new king now.
It's like, wait, mm-hmm. but what are you doing?
Yeah. Barristan, I think, is the closest to Ned in the whole damn book. Barristan's as far as honor awesome. Before everything else, you know?
I would read a whole series of books that are like a prequel. Once the series is over, if George wanted to write a prequel all about Sir Barristan the Bold, I would buy them and I would read them.
Yeah,
I love him. What I wanted to mention was, and we skipped over it, is when the Dothraki, in air quotes, horde, is mm-hmm. riding away from Dothrak, we do see the wine cellar being dragged from Daenerys's horse, mm-hmm. and he's naked. And you know what? It corrects a statement earlier. Yeah, that's not a pretty naked person. And he looked at me in pain.
PG was here, and he watched it with Chooch and I, and so I aloud said, I wonder if he got paid enough to justify being naked forever on screen. The actor, of course.
And yeah, he's not in for a good afternoon.
No.
I've done a little Googling and found out that quite a few of the actors that have been very naked have been naked in other projects.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that was part of the selection process. All right, we're looking for someone to play Roz. Have you done complete full frontal? Oh my, yes. Okay.
You're we'll in. Here.
So that gives me hope for some future scenes with Jamie.
Well, to be sure, I think I don't know if they necessarily would require people who have done it before, but I'm quite sure that it's part of the casting of, like, we will require you to
mm-hmm.
to have your thing flop around.
Yeah. You're gonna be naked.
Yep.
Not only naked, but jostling naked.
The Four Monty. Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's Robert.
Exactly.
Is are Viv and I the only ones that got that?
No, I got it.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I was a little bit distracted.
The actor that played King Robert was in The Full Monty?
He was?
Yes, he was.
I know. I didn't know it. Phil and Jen said it. Huh. The Rossies said Mark it. And Addy. I was like, oh, yeah, right on.
Cool.
He was the fat guy.
Yeah.
No.
What the hell are you saying?
That redhead, ginger, gay one?
Now that's range.
So we have PG's thoughts.
Yes, let's hear PG's thoughts. Can you do your best PG voice?
All right.
Just read it. Your voice is already so sore.
Yeah, it's already crunchy enough. This was my least favorite episode so far. I don't care how badly you want to cater to viewers that haven't read the book, but really? And he goes through some bullet points of horrible foreshadowings. Number one, foreshadowing the end of the episode through a badly written scene with Littlefinger with absolutely no new information. It was like watching a Firefly episode where Joss Whedon was forced to repeat minutes of pilot exposition because Fox showed episodes out of order. Except HBO hadn't done that to the creators here. He left me a scar from here to here. We already knew that. They could have just skipped 4 minutes of disappearing digits to have Littlefinger, see what I did there, say, I was too weak to have Catelyn that way, so I'm going to fuck over Ned so I can pay the Starks back for bullying me during my youth. Even getting to see Roz moan and look good couldn't cover up the maximum craptitude of this scene.
Wow.
Wow.
He hid that very well. As I gotta say, as we were watching it, we were all very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea how much he disliked that scene. I figured he was, you know, he's a boy. He's loving it. I'm a girl. That's pretty hot.
Oh, and by the way, forget Roz, the dark-haired girl.
Mm-hmm.
She trumps Roz.
My guess is that that's how they're going to show Dornish.
Yeah.
Dornish people.
I agree. That's probably it. But when I looked at her.
That's the strangest thing you've ever eaten. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Did Dornish women count?
I was going to say that I thought she looked like Leonard's girlfriend on Big Bang Theory.
Priya.
Oh, Priya?
Yeah.
Priya?
Because Priya, I think, is beautiful, and I thought this girl was beautiful, too.
True.
So now Chuchu is going to be thinking of Priya in a completely different way from here on out.
Chuchu's not the only one.
He did do a little pause and a look up at the at the ceiling like, huh, yeah.
Save that for later. Horrible foreshadowing number two. Dany complains that she wants her throne. Drogo says he won't cross the Poison Sea, which we've heard from Ned, Ser Jorah, and anyone else that mentions the Dothraki.
Mm-hmm.
True?
Yep.
Horrible foreshadowing number three. Ned telling Varys to stop the assassination. We can't, which Robert and others had said just the episode before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that the assassination attempt on Dany, the Drogo / Conan, I will hear the lamentations of the women speech to the Dothraki horde, all 10 of them, and the end of the episode were three great scenes. It's just that they were made less great because of the episode's first 40 minutes.
Mm.
And one last thing. What the bleep was with having Littlefinger take such an active role in the final scene? Unless I'm mistaken, in the books, there is a question whether Janos Slent, by the way, talk about bad foreshadowing. Mm. Did anyone that hadn't read the books even know who Janos was at this point? Mm. Had always been Cersei's man and had betrayed Littlefinger, or if Littlefinger had actively betrayed Ned.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this important? Well, that would be a spoiler. But so blatantly putting Littlefinger in the middle of things leaves no ambiguity for a character that survives on such ambiguity.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But
that's not how I read it.
No, wait. Yeah. Didn't we just have a whole conversation about how people have accidentally understood that scene as Littlefinger kills Ned?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, you didn't hear that. Well, yes, I know, but I'm just saying, PG says, unless I'm mistaken, and I think we're saying, yes, he was mistaken.
Well,
yes.
I don't remember. I'll be honest. I don't remember if it was Littlefinger that held the knife to his neck.
It was.
In the book.
Absolutely.
I remember a knife being held to his throat, and then I thought that he was killed. I didn't, to be honest with you, I saw Littlefinger the first time I read it, because I read book one, and then I read book two, and then I went back and read 1, 2, 3, 4. So in the first reading of the first time, what I remember was not really paying a lot of attention to Littlefinger. He just seemed like a whiny little, I wanted Caitlin, darn it, and or Catalan, you know. And so I didn't pay a lot of attention to him at the first reading. So that might be why I'm not remembering it as clearly as you guys.
Well, regardless of who holds the knife, he did, Littlefinger did have that line.
Yeah.
I told you in the beginning you never should have trusted me, which implicitly states
absolutely
his motivation.
Yeah.
Like the motivation there. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I remember it playing out in the book exactly as it did on screen.
Okay.
And also, I mean, PG certainly has the right to his opinion. And absolutely. I will acknowledge that those couple examples he gives are certainly foreshadowing and are recovering some information that we do already have. However, I mean, I think there's a couple of things there. One is that, you know, he can call it catering to people who haven't read the books if he wants. But guess what, PG? That is the majority of the audience.
Yeah.
And I think that some catering is therefore necessary. And I think so far, in my personal opinion, the scenes that they do that have so far always included something else interesting going on. And I don't just mean, you know, the nudity. I mean, his whole speech about, you know, he's telling her how to please a man, but it's the same thing that he's doing in the sense of, you know, he's talking about Ned when he says, you know, he's always suspected he was a better man, but now he knows for sure. And, you know, the whole thing of, you know, how you manipulate people. And him just always talking about his motivations, I thought that was great. And to be sure, yes, it recovers some information that we had already gotten before. But you know what? There's an awful lot of subtext that people who haven't read the books are already missing altogether. And so some of this stuff that's important, like how Baelish feels about Catelyn and about Ned, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the motivation for why he, you know, obviously it's for more power. There's always the want of more power and money for Littlefinger, but I don't think that's what we get at this point. I think what we get at this point is that it's revenge for Catelyn.
Well, yeah. And I also think it's interesting that we see that Littlefinger isn't sexually motivated. I mean, the guy owns a bunch of whorehouses, but he doesn't partake really. It's not really his interest. His interest is something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, it's really important because a lot of people are sexually motivated, and it's nice to see that, no, he's cunning and he's clever and he's been working on this shit for a long time.
Yeah.
20 years, man.
Yeah.
That makes him a little scarier.
Exactly.
Well, I get a little bit of a sense from him, too, that he has kind of rechanneled that sexual energy elsewhere. So, like, the part of the reason he doesn't partake is probably because the idea of, you know, just being with a woman doesn't really do it for him anymore.
Yep.
It's more like he has fetishized this whole sneakiness behind the scenes, being the guy who pulls the puppet strings thing.
I agree. I mean, he went from a guy from such a small house and with such limited resources to one of the richest men in King's Landing and sitting on the small council.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we find out later, it's not a spoiler because it just explains where Littlefinger comes from, but we find out later in one of the much later books, you actually see where Littlefinger is from. And it's just a piece of crap on a tiny little strip of land.
Yeah.
You know, the guy had nothing. There is no family. There's no legacy. There's nothing, really. And he has made something of himself. And that's really important, I think.
Oh, and of course, at the end of the scene, we also hear that Renly and Ser Jorah have ridden off into the sunset.
Yes. And you mean Loras.
Or Loras, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Renly and Loras.
I hope they're happy.
It's not so much into the sunset as much as holy crap, things are about. It's about to hit the fan. Let's get the hell out of here.
Shit, gonna hit the fan. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Did you notice he doesn't have to bend his knee?
Right.
And he doesn't have to get involved.
Yeah.
So he's not considered an enemy for leaving. He kind of does what Stannis did, but when John Aaron died. I was like, you know what? Let me get the pluck out here.
Retreat, retreat.
Yeah.
Run away.
So I think, unless anybody got feedback, I think we're survey time.
I might have feedback. All right, so I don't have feedback.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't see any in the email although we don't have access to the voicemail line.
If you called, we will air it next episode.
That's right. But since you haven't heard the last episode yet, we're pretty sure you haven't called with feedback on that episode.
Yes.
So we go to the survey, which was an in-house survey. And the questions that Christiana posed for us were, how many important handwritten messages were there?
Ooh.
And the other one was, how many individual female nipples?
Oh, my gosh.
And so
I have no idea what either of those are or what I voted.
Well, we did it randomly at the end of the last recording. So my count was Ned's order, Robert's will, Sir Jorah's pardon, and Ned's letter to Stannis. Mm-hmm. So I have 4 for that.
Wow, that's a lot of letters.
That's one of the reasons that I mentioned that category.
Yeah, I put Ned's order, but what it was Ned's order to Tywin in the very opening scene, summoning him to court and doom be upon the mountain.
Which, you know, it's like he gave the order in a previous episode, but they're reading it.
It's presented in red here, yeah. And then for the how many individual female nipples... There were now, and again, I just counted. We were only talking about female nipples, and they only counted once you saw them. That was it for the scene.
Human female nipples.
Human female human. Yeah, that because we joked about, did the stag have nipples? Wait a minute, it's a stag. But the brothel scene. So there were 4 individual female nipples on the 2 ladies. Did anybody catch any other female nipples flying around?
Those were really the only ones that I was...
But I can understand why you selected that question, because those were 4 very important nipples. That was a scene that we paid a lot of attention to.
You noticed them.
So the guesses were, in order that they were made, was Nutty's was 2 messages and 6 nipples.
So off.
PG voted 4 messages, 9 nipples. I voted 3 messages and 15 nipples. And Chooch voted 2 and 2.
So Chooch wins.
Ooh.
You won the nipple contest.
The booby prize.
Yes, honey, you win the no prize, the booby prize.
And of course, we hadn't opened that to the public since people could see it on HBO Go ahead of time.
Right.
I have a question. Are people able to see episode 8 on HBO to go?
No. Or at least they were. We weren't right after the... Episode 7, anyway. I haven't looked since
I forgot to check, but I think it was a one-time promotion.
Yeah, I think so.
I think we're just about finished here. We wanted to mention that we did have the amazing privilege to interview Christian Nairn, who plays Hodor. So as soon as we get that all cleaned up and put a bow on it, we will drop it into the feed as a special episode, I believe.
Probably as a special episode, I'm thinking, because we're trying to keep the episodes lined up with the TV show episode numbers. And I can say he's a fascinating, really cool guy.
Really, really cool guy.
Really funny guy. I think you guys will enjoy it. Chooch and I interviewed him by ourselves because we didn't want to overwhelm the interview with a bunch of different voices. Mm-hmm. So sadly, listeners, it's just Chooch and I, but you get Christian's.
That's all they care about anyway.
I know, so. Right?
They only care about Christian.
Hodor, I choose you.
Yeah.
There you go. Christiana has rounded out the references. We hit them all.
One Hodor to rule them all.
If we're done talking about Christian, I had something that I wanted to mention. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, which, as I said in an earlier episode, is the only podcast about the series, has gone past episode 6 before the HBO series came about, and they've been going on for the last 3 years. I like to describe them as a frat party filled with total geeks for the books. They had an episode with a newbie to the show. He's never read the books, and he has a YouTube series, and it's hilarious, and I love his thoughts on it, and I really want to plug this here. It's Ataku Assemble on YouTube, Ataku Assemble, and his thoughts on the different characters and what's going on are really interesting and hilarious. And my only problem is that they're YouTube videos. I wish they were just audio so I could download them and listen to them in the car. And I highly recommend our listeners going in and checking that out. And it's completely spoiler-free, so you get to hear more opinions and things like that about the series. And that's complete, and you don't have to worry about getting spoiled. So
that kind of reminds me of, do you remember the last season of Lost? They had there was a guy that was doing a blog that had never seen any of the previous seasons. And so he just walks into the last season of Lost, and he's describing what he's understanding, not having any of the backstory of the previous seasons. It was really funny.
It was hilarious.
Yeah. Pretty funny. I never really watched Lost.
I watched it until they killed Charlie, and like, I said, I'm out.
And in his first blog post, instead of Jack, I think he kept saying, like, John or something.
Yeah.
And then in the second blog post, he's like, all right, well, I think I'm just going to keep calling him John because that's what he is in my head or something. And then later on, he's like, all right, well, you know, he really is Jack. So let's switch it up here. And
yeah, it was fantastic. Well, we'll find that one and link to it in the show notes.
And he combined it with his own little napkin drawings of the scenes that he found most important.
That's great. But yeah, I'm really excited at seeing all of the different podcasts out there, blogs. I mean, even the Mary Sue has an article every week about Game of Thrones, and it's really neat to see all the excitement.
Absolutely.
And I think we mentioned earlier that most of the viewers have never read the books. And from what I'm seeing, I don't have any actual numbers, but from what I'm seeing, it seems like there are so many people watching this that have never even heard of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And it excites me because, like with True Blood and the Sookie Sackhouse books, we're going to get a lot more people reading these books.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe Martin will get himself a Hugo. Or what's the other one that he keeps losing to J.K. Rowling? He doesn't have her to worry about anymore. I don't remember what the other one is. But every year he was up for an award, he'd lose it to J.K. Rowling. So
maybe.
Did we have anything else?
No, I don't think so. I think that's it. Christiana, do you have anything?
Nope.
Nope.
Oh, I had one thing.
Mm.
Actually, now that I remember it, my husband and I were talking because we have all of the episodes on our DVR.
So do we.
And we're going to be moving soon. So we were thinking at the end of the series, we're going to have a Saturday and we're going to watch every single episode back to back. So there's no week in between. And I was just wondering if anyone else was that crazy or not.
I'm down.
Well, the thought has crossed my mind, and we do still have them all on the DVR.
We have them all, and we're hoping to move soon, too. So, yeah, I'm down with that. How about you, Christiana?
I hope you guys have fun. I learned my lesson once trying to watch all three extended editions of The Lord of the Rings all in one day.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I love those movies, by the end, I was really tired of it.
Well, you know what we did.
As much sex.
You know what we did for Harry Potter right before the last one came out is, and of course it ended up PG scheduled to WakaCon the same weekend, but we had this scheduled with Jet for months, which was to watch the first six Harry Potter movies over a weekend.
Didn't you guys make like some awesome desserts?
Oh yeah, we had butterbeer and sugar mice.
Jet went mining and she found some great recipes.
Pumpkin pasties
and the sugar mice, and I made chocolate frogs and the pumpkin juice and the butterbeer. It was, and I got some of the, you know, the
We had the every flavor beans.
Well, we had those, but there was another one with the cotton candy bubblegum. But it was a lot of fun. But yeah, we watched all of those over the weekend and fit in a little bit of TuwakaCon too. We're going to try and do all seven movies again before the last one comes out, but I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I don't know if, I just love it though, to see the progression from that little teeny tiny boy that played Harry Potter to how he is in the seventh one is just eerie and shocking and amazing. Yeah, but we're down, depending on scheduling. We're totally down for it.
Cool. Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting not having the gaps in between them. And Christiana will be out playing video games.
I might do two sittings, you know what
there
I mean?
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not all 10 at once.
Yeah, that's some sore-ass time.
It is 10 hours of viewing, so.
Got to do stretches in between and all that stuff. Oh, and I do want to add that having sampled Nutty's lemon cakes, oh, those were so delicious. Fantastic job.
I think my favorite reaction was how Heather Welliver's.
Heather loves her some lemon, man.
Oh my gosh. I was her dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Wolf from the Sigler Junkie Boards, he somehow managed to snag three on that first night. So anyone that didn't get them, you know who to go after.
I was nice. I only took one.
But you had a special one.
I had a special one because I don't like a lot of frosting or a lot of fillings and stuff like that. So you left one unfilled for me. And it was heavenly.
Well, sans filling, those were somewhere between 100 and 150 calories.
Ooh.
FYI. With filling, I think it only added like maybe 25 to 50 calories.
It's not bad.
I would have had two had I known that. I'm glad you didn't tell me because I would have been in trouble with the coach dude too.
Well, I didn't want to tell anyone because you don't tell people that you make things that are good for them until after they've eaten them.
Oh, honey, you're talking to a mom. I know this.
Yes. So, those were gobbled up.
They were fantastic. They were moist and delicious and wonderful.
And they came straight from Winterfell.
The Great Northern.
Canada is Winterfell.
Right on.
That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you, panelists, for...
Now you're talking like Baltica.
Go on another round.
We're co-hosts. We're not panelists.
Thank you, co-hosts.
You're welcome.
Party in my room later tonight.
meet in the bar. The Great Gathering Post.
And we'll talk to everybody next week.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.